women who rape. Many would say it's something that occurs infrequently, but you'd be surprised to learn that according to new research, sexual victimisation by women is more common than gender stereotypes would suggest. The report, Sexual Victimisation Perpetrated by Women, was co-authored by Lara Stemple, director of UCLA's Health and Human Rights Law Project, who joins us today from Los Angeles. Lara, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you very much.
It's a surprising take on this issue. It really is. This program is called Counterpoint, and this is a counterpoint to what people normally think.
It absolutely is a counterpoint, and I myself have been studying and working on this issue for nearly 15 years, and I was even surprised by the findings. So yes, it's been quite remarkable.
So in short form, let's deal with the headline, if you like, first of this subject area. What did you find?
What we did is we took large-scale federal agency surveys that have reached many tens of thousands of people and have shown internally consistent results over time. And we looked at them all together in order to glean an overall picture of female perpetration of sexual victimization. And what we found is that particularly when men are the victims, women are very, very often the perpetrators.
How can that be? I mean, is that, for example, it can't be amongst the prison population, can it? Because men and women aren't together in prison.
I'm glad you brought up the prison population because we did look at new surveys that have been done in the U.S. And what we found is that women are more likely to be sexually victimized by women inmates than men are by male inmates. So when we think of prison sexual victimization, normally we think of male prisoner rape. And I know I've worked on that issue for many years, and that was my assumption, is that that was the vast majority. But in fact, it's a greater risk for women, and we were very surprised to see that.
Indeed. Now, what explanation can you offer for this? Not that it's your job to offer it, but do you see an explanation for why this has been so underreported in the past?
Sure. It's a great question. It's something that I've given a lot of thought to. We don't know. You're right. Our survey was looking at prevalence and kind of counting up the numbers. But because I've given it a lot of thought, I've begun to realize that actually this is something that is so neglected, so counter to our assumptions about what happens when sexual victimization takes place, that frankly, for many, many years, no one was really even asking the question. So a lot of large-scale surveys that have been done have, first of all, only asked women about their experiences with sexual victimization, and only recently have we even begun to ask men. Only in the last decade have there been a number of small-scale surveys done on this topic, and ours is really the first that looks at large-scale surveys across multiple different federal agencies. And once you ask the question and people are reporting in anonymous surveys with no reason, no incentive to make things up, what you find is quite surprising, and that's that often men are experiencing this, and typically at the hands of female perpetrators.
And I thought it was interesting, if I understood the statistic correctly, that the survey focuses on violent crime. You pulled together all this data from 2010 to 2013, and you found that female perpetrators acting without a male co-perpetrator, so this is someone on their own, were reported in 28% of rape or sexual assault incidents involving male victims, but only 4.1% involving female victims.
Yes, that's right. Women are still...
You know, I don't know about you, but I don't think of women as being the sexual aggressors against men, maybe against other women, but not against men, not in that degree of difference.
Well, you're absolutely right. I didn't think it either, and I don't think that most people do think of it that way. So that's why these results are so surprising and, in my view, significant. I think they really ought to change the way we see sexual victimization, and we have to move away from the stereotypes that all of us, myself included, have held for a very long time. So you cited the violent crime statistics in the U.S., and the health statistics put out by our Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are even more striking. So those surveys found that both men and women were reporting equal rates of sexual victimization in the last 12 months. And for men, the most common form of non-consensual sex that they experience is being made to penetrate someone else. So being made to have sex with someone else when they are the penetrative partner. They were reporting female perpetrators in 79% of all cases. And I think that's quite striking.
Mm. And just going back to the prison population for a bit, you tend to think, well, maybe that's got something to do with staffing ratios, but it hasn't, because while the reporting of abuse by female staff is higher, it's actually male staff form the higher proportion of staff in these institutions.
That's right. We talked a moment ago about inmate-on-inmate abuse, and of course, staff-on-inmate abuse is another serious problem behind bars, whether it's men or women. And what we found is that in both adult prisons and also in juvenile facilities, which is quite disturbing in my view, women are overwhelmingly the perpetrators of this form of abuse. So we often think of the male staff member as the sexual threat, and that is actually the case for women inmates and girls in juvenile detention. But because upwards of 90% of those held behind bars are male, men and boys, and their perpetrators are vastly disproportionately female, when you look at the entire population, you find that women make up the largest percentage of abusers. And as you say, it's not because it's only women working in those facilities. Men are more likely to be employed in those facilities. So we can't explain it that way. There's something else, in fact, that's going on.
I'm talking with Lara Stempel, Director of UCLA's Health and Human Rights Law Project, about the prevalence of female sexual predators. Let's turn to college kids. You say 43% report being sexually coerced, and of them, 95% refer to female perpetrators. So we're talking about 95% of 43% being female perpetrators. But then you say that sexual coercion includes verbal pressure, such as nagging or begging. And I have to say, I sort of lost a bit of enthusiasm for this task at that point, because nagging or begging, look, it's unpleasant, it's unattractive, but gee.
I completely agree with you. And that actually was not one of the surveys that was in our overall analysis when we looked at these large-scale federal agency surveys.
Oh, great.
That's a tiny study that we provided on background. And we put the nagging and begging in the paper on purpose because it made us so unsure about the results. So we did want to flag that. I think it's a valid point.
Oh, make me feel so much better.
I'm glad. Or worse, as the case may be, because it does indicate that the surveys we're looking at, which I think are more reliable, they use a more stringent definition. So the CDC, for example, requires that someone was either physically forced or was unable to consent, either because they were too drunk to consent, drugged, or passed out. So so they use a much higher standard in terms of what actually was the mechanism by which the forcible or non-consensual act took place, and simply nagging someone or begging would not have risen to that level and would not be considered sexual victimization for the purpose of the large surveys we looked at.
No. Well, you talk about the National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions with a big sample, some 43,000 people. And within that, those who affirmed, that is self-reporting, that they'd ever forced someone to have sex with them against their will, about 43% were women and 56% men. I know it's not 50-50, but it's much higher than one might otherwise have imagined.
Absolutely. It was certainly much higher than I would have guessed. And I think it's really interesting that you pointed to the survey, because it is one where, as you say, the person is being asked to self-report about their own behavior. So talk about not having an incentive to exaggerate. It's an anonymous survey, but still it's quite remarkable, I find, that such a high proportion of women did report that they forced themselves on someone. So I think we have to, when we look at the consistency across so many of these surveys, it really does force us to re-examine our assumptions about what's really going on.
Mm. And look, last but not least, in a more sensitive area, and this is the abuse of children, the researchers have found that victims who experience childhood sexual abuse at the hands of either men or women are much more likely to report it if it's a man, and worryingly, possibly so acute is the stress of being sexually abused by a woman that they may even report it as the abuser being a male.
Yes, there was a survey that found that, and we included it. It wasn't our research, but I think it is important to note because it really points to the fact that this is something that male victims and probably female victims as well find shameful, and they don't want to confess that it happened to them. I think it's particularly acute for men who have issues around wanting to project a certain image of their masculinity. They want to be seen as quote-unquote real men. And so it's very difficult to admit that this type of violation happened at the hands of a woman. And they have reason to feel that way. I mean, I wish that they wouldn't, but unfortunately our society has treated male victims who have been abused by females in a rather dismissive manner. And, you know, this is because of stereotypes that men are sexually insatiable. And so that anytime a man has an opportunity for sex, he should simply enjoy it. They don't acknowledge the fact that the harms can in fact be quite real, and that the psychological consequences for male victims of female perpetrators are often very, very similar to the consequences that female victims experience.
Mm. And for the younger male victim, either underage or, you know, very young in any event,
true, yeah.
There's the stereotype of the male being the initiated, the aggressor. So it's not only the we're on an equal footing and this person has abused me, they have to deal with that, but they also have to deal with, but you, the public, don't think we're on an equal footing. You think I'm the male and therefore I'm more in charge of this. And this woman has come and abused me, and I therefore have to admit to not only not being equal, but to being subjugated by her. So it's a double hurt, the sexual assault, but the put down of the male who might see himself or knows that others see him as being the aggressor.
Absolutely. And I think there are also stereotypes about women as caretakers that make it very hard for boys to come forward, because there's this assumption that, you know, if you're with a woman, if you're with a female, that's going to be safe. That the ones who pose a sexual threat are men. And so it can be very confusing because we don't send messages to boys or to girls in our society that women can also commit sexual abuse of them. And so when it happens, it can be particularly confusing and hard for those types of victims to know how to respond.
Mm. Lara, has there been much international cooperation on these studies? Or do you know if people in Australia, for example, are working on this issue?
Well, I do know in the region there is some work on behalf of male victims, certainly, but I don't know of any large-scale research that's happening, and I would invite any of your listeners who want to talk to me about that, if they know better than I, to please contact me at UCLA. I'd be fascinated to learn about it. One thing I can say, speaking globally, is that what has happened by and large is that surveys haven't really been undertaken that ask the same questions of both women and men side by side at the same time. So there have been surveys of women and there have been surveys of men, both of which show that both populations are victimized, but it's really hard to compare the frequency when they aren't asked at the same time. Mm. So there really needs to be a new era of research where both men and women and boys and girls are asked these questions so that we can get a more accurate understanding, because what we've seen in the U.S. is that every time everyone is asked, the results are surprising and the results don't run perfectly according to the stereotypes that we all have previously had, and it's time for that to change.
Indeed. Lara Stemple, it's a very interesting area of work that you're pursuing, and we've enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Lara Stemple, Director of UCLA's Health and Human Rights Law Project, talking to us about the prevalence of female sexual predators.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia, if you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell, media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.